perhaps in the same category with a general practitioner. It's not unique to insurance. Certainly in workers' comp, we've got hundreds of classifications for that very reason. But we did not get into that to any great extent. Perhaps we should have. But at that time, the relationship between certain doctors' association and a certain insurance company was very, well, they didn't want to talk about it. And it would have been very difficult to get that information. It would be my suspicion they were not real cooperative.
Representative Dix.
Just to follow up, Bob, was there ever a discussion about the for instance, if this committee took the action of making those who write a medical malpractice fit doctors into four categories again, was there ever any discussion, for instance, how much higher the general practitioner would have to pay and how that would affect the obstetrician's rates? Because I would imagine it would level out at some point, the obstetrician's rates coming down, the general practitioner's going up.
That's exactly what would happen, and we did not discuss that.
Representative Shiprock, just briefly on the liquor liability issue, we're expecting Representative Hooley here shortly, so I'll let you be excused in just a little bit longer, but what are some of your ideas in terms of how we might address the liquor liability issue? Some, we do have bills that would create sort of a mandatory fund. There are other proposals as well, which I'm sure were discussed with you. Have your feelings lean in one particular direction or another on that point?
Sure. I had several suggestions. I like the idea of a fund. I've always been a big fan of self-insurance anyway, and we wouldn't have some of these problems. There are other things that need to be done, and I think the industry as a whole is trying to address them through the server program that they currently have. You've got to get it through to some of these establishments that the old practices are no longer going to be tolerated. You've got another problem, however, that I don't know how you're going to deal with this. That's the fact is that a lot of bars and taverns have went without insurance now for 2 years. They're taking a risk, but I don't know if you're going to get them back to in the insurance business. And this is my own observation, my own feeling that. But when you own an establishment and you're going to save $10,000 a year by literally going bare, even though you're taking a risk and you know it, it may be very difficult to get that insurance back in those places, and we've got to have the insurance especially in liquor liability. But the real world is that, what's the statistics, 90% are now bare. Scary. I have to do something about it.
Representative Hanlon?
Representative Shiprock, in my district, I had a restaurant bar who had its rates go up, and the owner came to me, and the rate was $3,000 per year for the policy. And the following year, they got notice that the rate would be $16,000 and that the coverage was cut in half. Yep. I called the insurance commissioner's office, and they looked around for other people that wrote the insurance and found a company that would write the coverage like it was last year. And for $3,800, in other words, an increase of $800, rather than for less coverage going up to a rate of $16,000. From your experience on the interim, is it unusual to have that wide a disparity? Or did you get anecdotal stories like this actual story I got from a small business in my district?
Representative Hanlon, we heard story after story after story like you just described. I did a little informal poll of my own district, went and had a soda pop with all these bar owners, and every one of them told me the same thing. Same thing. And it's, I just did another little informal poll a couple weekends ago, and the rates still have not seemed to come down, although they're just reapplying, some of them are reapplying. There seems to be more more coverage available, but the cost doesn't seem to be coming down significantly, at least in the liquor end.
Representative Hanlon.
Representative Shiprock, in this polling that you did, is there some sort of scientific technique, or or is there a particular way you go around drinking these soda pops? No, never mind.
Bob, somewhat along the same lines, was there testimony, or based upon your experience and conversations with your constituents, have there been other sort of adverse economic circumstances that have affected the that restaurant and beverage industry over the past few years?
Well, yeah. Number one that we're all painfully aware of, first of all, has been the economy. The general economy, people are not going to go out for dinner when they're not working. This particular issue, the insurance issue, overshadows anything else, however. And even what they talk about, the workers' comp rates and other insurances, auto, they don't even touch this issue as far as these establishments. And you can imagine, one person owner, they're not making a lot of money. And the Attorney General wants to take their gambling machines out all the time. That costs them. So they, you get stuck with a 30. I got one guy runs a very modest place, closest one to my house, and he's paying $28,000 a year now, and but he has to have it, and there's no profit in it.
Bob, I think during the interim task force, when we were discussing what changes had happened in Oregon over the past few years that might have affected the cost of liability insurance, there was some discussion of changes made to the law in 1979. I believe in response to bills introduced by the restaurant and beverage industry itself. But if I recall correctly, it also came out that, for reasons which were never entirely clear to me, that the industry had, for some reason, misevaluated misplaced Oregon in terms of how it is they evaluate states and their laws as it relates to liquor liability. Could you share what information or what you recall about that discussion?
Yes, Representative Springer, very clearly. We had committee staff do some, we couldn't figure out what's the matter with Oregon. Why Oregon on this liquor liability? It was so bad. Our numbers didn't show us to be that bad. So we did, after a while, we got to know people all over the United States. We'd call all over the United States. I don't know what our phone bill actually ever was, but it must have been good. And talked and got to know the right people to speak to in various lines of insurance. And it came to pass that in conversations with some people, I think in the Midwest, when asked this question, it finally came out that apparently some national rating bureau had frankly not misunderstood, because it's a common legal term in that business, but apparently it had not picked up that the Oregon legislature changed the law almost 8 years ago. And when they were informed of it, they said that would make a heck of a difference. And so oftentimes in insurance, those things do happen. I mean, a small change to a national rating bureau is significant. I'm hopeful that that's one of the reasons why there seems to be more availability at this time, but I haven't heard back since then.
Thank you. Further questions for Representative Shipwright? Okay, if not, Bob, thanks again.
Thank
very
you.
Much. And again,
my
anytime
pleasure.
You'd like to come back and join us. Thank you. We have a message from Representative Hooley, who's down in the Ways and Means Subcommittee. She hopes to be up in a few minutes. Apparently, they are working on a budget and subcommittee, which she chairs. So while we have a couple moments here, Council, could I ask you perhaps to take just a moment and review just briefly some of the materials that are before us and maybe the organization and our notebooks and what information we hope to include therein?
These books we want to keep in the back corner of the room on the stand over there, and we'll update them at the end of each hearing. We have requested 20 copies of all testimony. You can keep in front of you what you want, take it away, but we will replace and put fresh exhibits, testimony, and amendments in the notebooks, and they'll be kept for all full committee members. In front of you is the 1976 Interim Task Force on Medical Malpractice, which has been referred to before. Do you want me to walk through the books?
Sure, why don't we take a moment to do that?
Organized. We'll run an index for you in the front of the book. You have copies of the Joint Interim Task Force report, and minutes are in the back. We will only reproduce minutes of hearings relating directly to the liability insurance bills. So, and they should be, we're going to try to have them in your books within 2 or 3 days after each hearing.
Okay, I believe when Mr. Marquardt was down to testify before our committee almost a month ago, he left some reports which have been prepared. Are we ordering those, or are they?
We've ordered them 2 or 3 weeks ago. They're being sent down. We haven't received them yet. There are in staff offices copy of the Washington reports.
Okay, I guess I would invite subcommittee members or full committee members who are with us, if there are any additional items of information that you want to request through staff or that you would like to request be included within the bill books that we're putting together, please let myself or staff know of that.
Well, on that note, Dick, I have a question.
Phillips.
Of the package that was sent over to us, did they go through and do a fiscal analysis on section by section of it, or have we asked for that? It would just out of curiosity, if nothing else, to see what the actual effect or projected effect of some of the changes would be. I went through it has given to me, and it's kind of hard to make some judgments.
I'm not sure if a fiscal analysis was prepared. I have heard it suggested that there may be a fiscal impact, and Council, perhaps we should make that request specifically of fiscal at this point.
Some of it wouldn't. I mean, some of it there's obviously it wouldn't matter or wouldn't have any impact, but there's others that may.
I guess while we're awaiting Representative Hooley's arrival, hopefully within a few minutes, the chair earlier this week, a couple days ago, did circulate a tentative work schedule, which has brought some cries of anguish from ourselves and from our families. But given the time constraints that the leadership has requested of us, I think we're going to have to try to stick as close to that schedule as we can. I don't know if there are any comments that folks would like to share with us at this time. We will, within the next few days, try to print more details in terms of the specific sections. I would share with subcommittee members the fact that shortly after that we received the Senate bill, or actually before it did come over, I was contacted by Mr. Bessemet, who has testified before this committee previously, briefly on this subject, and he expressed to me his desire to make sure that there was ample opportunity for the folks that he represents to testify about the insurance reform provisions of Senate Bill 323. And he expressed the opinion that the Senate had taken up those issues somewhat late in its deliberations, and he felt that there was not an adequate opportunity to explore all the ramifications. So I think our first focus, probably in the first couple weeks, may be on those insurance aspects of the law. However, the chair is open to any suggestions or comments that other subcommittee members may have, and certainly any witnesses that you would like to invite or have testify. It's my understanding Mr. Bessemet, Mr. Powell, and Mr. Monroe have invited, and working with the Insurance Commissioner's Office, we're going to try to bring in individuals who are experts in the area of insurance, rate making, et cetera, so we can have the benefit of their testimony as we consider not only the insurance provisions, but the tort reform provisions as well. Representative Bunn?
I didn't even have my hand up. Mr. Chairman, you obviously set the schedule for the committee, but I would like to say for the record that the schedule you have set for the month of May, with the evening meetings and the daytime meetings, and with the schedule a number of us carry, for example, I serve on Legislative Council, Legislative Administration, Judiciary Committee, Trade and Economic Development Committee. Trade and Economic Development Committee is now going into evening subcommittees. We're going into evening subcommittees. The schedule as it is set makes it absolutely impossible for a legislator to do a quality job on the legislation they're working with. And I guess I need to put on the record at this point that if the schedule is going to be that intense, and I have a suggestion for an alternative, I am forced, in order to do an effective job on my other legislative duties, to select portions of the committees that I will not attend, and I will need to select those where I've heard the testimony as a member of the interim committee. And I guess what I would recommend to the chairman is that we consider compacting that testimony to a greater degree in order to allow us less scheduled hearing time in order to do a decent job as legislators.
Chair, certainly take that under advisement. Are there other comments? Representative Dix.
I think Representative Bunn raises some very legitimate points, but my concern, and one of the reasons why I felt it was important that we meet as often as we could on this subject, is because there is a large volume of information that we have to take a look at, and I am not going to get into a situation in June where somebody leans over to me and says, we have to do something, and we haven't had time to look, for instance, at the insurance package, which Mr. Bessonnet suggests that the Senate didn't have time to look at. And I think that by having hearings every day, whether they be in the afternoon or the evening, it at least affords us the opportunity to gather that information. I don't serve on as many committees as Representative Bunn. I think that he is obviously in a predicament. I only have two other committees. Just for the record, I'm not about to come to a conclusion on this issue unless we have the time to look at it thoroughly, and I've given that information to the Speaker as well as the Chair of this committee. And I think that we would be ill-advised to take action on anything as important as the issue that's going to be before us without having the opportunity to ask the questions and gather the information in order to make an informed decision on this issue. Although I will admit that there are a lot of preconceived notions going into this by all of us.
Representative Phillips?
Well, we're never going to have all the time in the world that we're going to need to study the issue. So at some point, we're going to have to make some decisions. And I guess that's my question to you. Should we assume that for the first 3 weeks of that agenda, we'll be going through informational briefings, if you were, would, rather than policy decisions, and perhaps in the last week, after accumulating a database, then put together a quote package that we believe meets the needs of both insurance and tort reform? Is that sort of the way you've got it looked at, or will we be working off a work item, maybe being either the insurance bill or the other package that was sent over by the Senate? How do you visualize that in your mind?
Well, I expect that for at least the first 3 weeks, most of the work will be in terms of receiving testimony, exhibits, amendments from those who we've asked to appear and those who have asked themselves to testify. I expect when we are able to reach the point after that period of gathering information, response to our questions, then that we would begin to focus on the policy issues. Representative Dix.
Maybe this isn't the right time, but I haven't had the opportunity to hear any testimony aside from the very small amount of testimony we've gotten from Mr. Nader and Representative Shiprock and a couple of other people where we've had informational briefings. And it really irritates me that there is a suggestion that we're going to take any action at all before this subcommittee has had the opportunity to look at anything in a serious fashion. But it seems to me that the chair, and reflected in his comments, has already made the decision that action will take place. And that's just what I'm talking about. I'm not certain that following the hearings process, we're going to take any action in my own mind. And maybe that's something other committee members have already made a decision on, and they've had the opportunity and the time to review information in private to make that decision. But I haven't drawn that conclusion.
Representative Bunn?
To follow up on Representative Phillips' question, is it your intent, Mr. Chair, to use what the Senate sent us as the vehicle for amending so that as we're hearing and working on the issue, if we have amendments, we should design them to fit into that bill as the vehicle?
That's correct. Although we are awaiting another Senate bill, which was presumably part of that package, Senate Bill 325. And in fact, I think the language in 324, for instance, all three bills, at least in one of the bills that we've received, are tied to each other in the fashion that all must pass for any one of them to become effective. And apparently that was the recommendation of the Legislative Council Committee in terms of the relating clause question and just how broad that might be, and whether or not one bill would contain the entire package or whether or not more than one bill would be necessary. And their recommendation, at least to the Senate, was that three bills would be necessary. Obviously, that process has gone through some degree of evolution. I'm not sure if we're ever going to get the other bill, and that's an issue we're going to have to, I guess, be prepared to deal with as well, just in terms of the procedure and which are going to be the vehicles. But I guess it's fair to say that 323 and 324 at this point would be the vehicles for action.
Further question, Mr.
Representative Bunn.
Would it be your intent that we wait until the entire hearing process is over before we begin considering amendment of sections, or is it your thought that we may, as we're going, take a particular section and work with it and develop changes to it? Sort of what kind of a process do you envision that?
Well, I'm still relatively open on that point. I think, as we've already heard expressed this afternoon, there maybe a majority of folks on the subcommittee who would prefer that we conduct our informational and hearing portion before we get to any substantive deliberation, if that's appropriate. I think folks should feel free to propose amendments, but whether or not at that point in the hearing process there'll be deliberation on those amendments, I think it's too early to say. Representative Bunn.
In that regard, I think it might be constructive, and I would concur with your direction there. I think it might be constructive if, as we go along, we might be able to suggest change items that we would like to have researched or draft material made on. I think it might also be helpful if we began developing a commentary on sections as we went along also.
To the extent that our staff resources permit, I'm sure we'd be glad to do so. But we're going to be, unfortunately, the Senate had this bill, as I think we're all aware. We just received the main bill Monday. That means the Senate had it for 97 or 98 session days. Obviously, we won't even have half that amount of time, perhaps a third that amount of time. And there are many folks of all persuasions who are not entirely satisfied with the work that the Senate performed, and I think they're looking to us, as they have in other areas, to try to improve upon the work that the Senate was able to complete.
Further comment, Mr. Chairman. I would hope that we would not ask our staff to go back after meetings and develop commentary. What I was thinking is that we may have the opportunity to develop some commentary on the record as we go along.
There's, you know, this is going to be a tough management tool to get this heard and through a conclusion in a short period of time. So you don't have an easy job, even if we all agreed with where we were going, to get it to arrive at the end point. And I think it's safe to say we don't all agree on where we might want to go, or whether we will have sufficient information to make some of the decisions that some people are demanding be made that might have to go left undone.
Yeah.
So that's going to be difficult. I guess on one final point, are you planning to look at the insurance section of the process as a preliminary, because you said Bess and Evan, those guys didn't feel they got a chance to voice their opinion, and then move into some of the other recommendations? Is that the general flow?
That's my sense at this time. my sense is that the area, at least personally speaking, where I feel I need the greatest amount of information is in the area of the proposals that are made to change our insurance laws here in the state of Oregon. That's not in any way, shape, or form to diminish the importance of the other provisions, but in terms of timing, at this point, and this is subject certainly to reconsideration as we work through the process, I think a starting point may be, as it has been to some extent already, the several sections of the bill which relate to insurance. Representative Hamlin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to disagree with Representative Bunn when he said that we ought to compact the hearings and in doing so, I haven't heard, and we've got some policy issues to deal with here. My objective is to do what this body can do to make insurance more affordable and more available. In order to do that, we need to have the evidence relating to how we cause, in my mind, those things to take place. And maybe I'm misinterpreting what Representative Bunn says, but he says, let's not spend much time listening to the evidence. Let's just make our decisions. If that's what he's saying, I really want to object. I've heard no evidence outside of a few policy statements on this area of the law thus far. And I think we, with all due respect, we all have heavy obligations on this committee elsewhere in addition to being on judiciary. With all due respect, I think we got to put in the time no matter how much of a crunch it is. I don't like your schedule any better than the next guy, Mr. Chairman, but I think it's a necessity.
I'm going to just make a concluding comment and then recess, because we have an event for one of our departing members up in the House Lounge at this time, and we're going to take a short recess. But I'm sure that members of this subcommittee may know that there were more people who wanted to serve on this subcommittee than there were positions available. And I suppose if it reaches the point that any member of this subcommittee feels that they don't have the time to complete the work of this subcommittee, there may be others who are willing to volunteer for that position. And we've tried to accommodate people's schedules. I know I serve on two subcommittees of this committee, as do many, if not most, members. And we obviously all do have other responsibilities, so I think that's an option if any member does feel that their other obligations are not going to permit them to participate fully in the work of this subcommittee. Representative Bunn?
Mr. Chair, this will be very brief. A committee member doesn't need to be threatened with loss of their subcommittee chair because they suggest that a committee be run more efficiently, and I think that's a ludicrous suggestion. Frankly, I did not suggest that we spend less time hearing evidence. I suggested we manage it more wisely. I will continue to suggest that. I think it's appropriate. We have heard bills where we managed testimony and said we simply have to cut off testimony at this point because we have too much work here and we have to manage it wisely. I will continue to advocate that, and I will continue to urge the chairman to consider that as a wise approach to the chairmanship of this committee.
So noted. We'll be in recess.
Then we would allow for a 10-year filing period. In addition to the 10-year filing period, there would be a substantial increase in the filing fee to make up for any potential economic costs that may result from this. I think Mr. Rawls may have some additional comments concerning this. I also understand, Mr. Chairman, that this proposal is being looked at by the people who are, I think, connected to the Uniform Commercial Code as a potential model for them, because, as I said, this was initiated back in the 1950s. And since that time, particularly in the last several years, we're finding that people are giving loans on assets other than real estate that are extending well beyond the five-year period.
Okay. Are there any questions regarding the amendments, or perhaps I should ask the folks at our witness table if they'd like to comment at this time? I assume you've had an opportunity to review the amendments. Are you prepared to indicate to us that you're all in favor of those amendments?